You're welcome back to the programme. I'm still in the company of our own Sinead Black here. We're talking about Sinead's personal experience of when she was at a crisis point with her mental health and picked up the phone to Pieta House. And unfortunately, that call went unanswered. And Sinead, as she said before 11 o'clock, was very lucky to have her sister who was there to intervene and then continued her journey back to good mental health, which is where you're at now, which is good. And both I and Sinead particularly are very keen to point out the fact that if this type of a conversation is, you know, worsening your mental mood, or if you already are in a mentally low place, it is very important that you ring, be it Pieta House or the Samaritans or the numerous other services that are available. This is not about discouraging people. This is about ensuring that the services that are provided are as good as are humanly possible. I'm going to be joined by another guest in a moment, but Sinead, I just wanted to ask what the reaction has been since you put this post out on social media, which in and of itself was a brave enough step, particularly given the weekend that was in it.
Yeah, I felt that I could not let it pass. I've had hundreds of messages since, you know, and I just want to highlight that I didn't, and for anyone listening, I didn't want to be given out. My main goal was just to make everyone aware of God, if this good and this energy and this, the concept of the walk is beautiful, gathering together, you know, in the Northwest, we're fabulous at doing that. But I just feel the input wasn't matching, you know, the output that I, on the other end of services, wasn't receiving, and that frustrated. And, you know, as I, when I did put that post off, hundreds of people wrote to me saying, Sinead, I'm so glad you said that because I felt the same. And in particular, like, we talk about it a lot, that young people, young mental health, and it hasn't been an easy world to grow up in. Like, we've just been, you're handed a phone at 2 years of age now. You know, years ago, you had fields and nature, and it was a slightly more easier place to grow up in. But I just want to speak to older people as well, because within those hundreds of messages, I received a message from a lady who was maybe in her 70s, who had attempted suicide twice and is finding it very difficult and feels that she's too old and nearly not worthy. And by God, did I soon tell her different. And we're hoping to have tea soon. But you know, the services.
So she needed to hear her importance and her value.
Absolutely.
Because I think that's what people don't realise sometimes. And you know what? Maybe there just isn't the mental capacity at a given time to realise that. But people are so blooming important, and we'd all move heaven and earth to sort of, yeah, you know, bring someone back from the brink if we could. We just need to know about it. And,
yeah,
and then we can do it. And you know, it's there's a serious mental health issue in guys in their 40s and 50s as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, there are so many different demographics outside of what you might, you know, if you weren't affected by this, presume is the situation. Stay there, Sinead.
Okay.
Mark McCollum has some thoughts on darkness into light and joins us as well. Good morning, Mark.
Hi, Greg. Hi, Sinead. How are you?
Good, Mark. Good.
Good. Yeah, I wrote a piece as well over the weekend. And like everybody else, I found my social media feed on Saturday flooded with yellow and dawn pictures, and which is wonderful. As Sinead said, it's brilliant, and it sort of builds solidarity, and it's the imagery of the sun walk and the social media hashtag. But I just felt like if we were actually serious about mental health care, we need to treat it as a public health issue and fund it from public funding, as opposed to relying on charities to pick up the slack. You know, I'm not anti-Pieta House. I'm not. They pay a critical service, and lives, they do save lives. But when a society chooses to outsource the most profound vulnerabilities like suicide and self-harm or mental despair to the voluntary sector, exposes something deeper, a moral and political failure. Ireland just spends over 5.3% of its health budget in mental health, way well below the EU average. And this underinvestment has created a vacuum that's filled by the charities that are operating like private businesses, competing for donations and investing in branding and paying their CEOs corporate level salaries. You know, the average, the person on the end of the phone and the volunteer counsellor is struggling on the front line. But this model, to me, it looks and thrives on symbolism. The darkness into light is an absolute masterclass of an emotional marketing. Thousands walk at dawn, and everybody's Instagram and Facebook is filled with images. But what the thing that I took at is what happens after the sunrise. Like, for many, in the darkest hour, the promised light never appears. My old mum was in that situation. Like, I made the call similar to Sinead and didn't get supported in any way at all. And again, she was a woman in her 70s who was in emotional distress. And we have to be able to take mental health support seriously.
The only thing is Mark, and I don't disagree with you, but in terms of support for people with autism or support with people child mental health issues, these things are formed because the vacuums that are there are never filled. So whilst we should strive for all of this stuff to be done by the state, you know, that's not happening.
But
something has to be there to fill the gap, doesn't it?
The charities are filling that gap, and they're doing the best they can. But as a society, we should be looking at what's causing people to be in situations of emotional crisis. Mm. We look at but we have a tendency to see it through the prism of the medical model. We look at people as something wrong with the individual, as opposed to the actual fact that somebody is in a situation of poverty, situation of unemployment, situation of poor relationship. Or poor housing. These are the things. So there's situational and environmental factors that aren't really taken into diagnostic criteria. We were very quick to point to the failings within the individual, but we're not looking at what's causing the problem.
And if I'm reading what you're saying, and I agree with you, that are you saying, Mark, and you say it quite clearly, but I haven't had an opportunity to read all of your article, that in some way darkness into light and partaking in it makes us feel like we're doing something and a problem is being fixed, when in reality it's not really that simple, and therefore the public feel that the need is met.
What we're doing through Darkness into Light, and it has a role, is raising awareness and making people aware of the fact that every year 500 people on average die through suicide. But I think the problem is, if we're just raising awareness and not actually dealing with the systemic causes or the systemic treating it properly, we're just going to keep going around in circles. We're raising awareness, but nothing changes.
And the slight issue that I would have, to be honest with you, is recent figures that suggest that suicide has fallen by 20% in the last 10 years now, unless we've a particular problem in this county. And unfortunately, policy and spend from a government perspective is governed by those figures. And if you're saying, OK, what we're doing now is working because there's been a significant drop in those dying by suicide, that concerns me.
But there's still on average over the last several years, it's circa 500 deaths a year. Unnecessary. And these are people that are impacted. They're lost to their families, to themselves, to the communities. And the devastation of families and trying to come to terms with what's happened. Mm-hmm. And that's not counting even the number of people that have attempt suicide or feeling that they have suicidal ideation, that they're in that state of despair.
Right.
One of the things I would sort of suggest is looking at, in terms of road deaths, we set up the Road Safety Authority. There should be a similar body for suicide prevention, a national sort of body looking at it, looking at research, international research, looking at models of practice and how that can be rolled out throughout the country. The willingness was there to tackle road deaths. Why is the same willingness not there to tackle the 500 deaths that are occurring a year through suicide?
I do think in terms of safety at sea, in terms of safety on the roads, I do believe that someone believes the resources are being spent to talk of what you're doing. I really don't think they've got the messaging right or the delivery correct in relation to that, Mark. And that's just my own personal opinion. We keep talking, we keep using the same language and talking the same way about mental health and suicide prevention. And I just don't think we've really figured out an effective way to communicate it.
It's a very hard path. Sorry, Mark, I just want to come in there. But my point is, it's a very, very hard path. And you're already on a very hard path, you know, it's a very difficult road, and I would just like to slightly make it easy. I agree with you that the government should form a body, absolutely, that's the end goal, but that is not going to be today or tomorrow, we all know that. I actually met with the Minister for Health completely by mistake when she was here. I was out for a walk with my hair in a bun and God knows what else. I didn't even know it was a lady. They said, Sinead, will you speak to the Minister for Health? I said, yeah, where is he? But I got speaking to her and we had a very serious talk, and I actually made contact with her yesterday as well, and I don't intend to drop it anytime soon either. But my point is, in the meantime, here is an example, and I'm only using Pieta as an example.
Well, just stay there a second, Mark. I'll let you go. Mark, thanks very much for your contribution. I do appreciate it. I know you've probably got things to do. Before you get to that, I just want to, because we've referenced the charity and all that, and this is not having a go at Pieta House, but Pieta House has a lot of paid staff. Do you know what I mean? And I think it's only fair to other charities where it's all done, sort of voluntarily. So you have a psychotherapist, they employ 16 on €31 an hour. Therapists, six of those on $59,000 a year. Philanthropy manager is on $45,000 a year. There's five of those philanthropy managers. Fundraising managers, there's four of those, each on $59,000 each. So say 60, 460, so 240. So they have to raise €240,000 before they cover the wages of the fundraising managers. Operations manager and $65,000 a year. There's three salaries reported at that. Are these jobs available? Sorry. No, these are average salaries. But anyway, those are the average salaries. I'll come back to the actual specific numbers from Pieta House directly myself. But my point being is that these are sort of well-funded positions. There might only be one fund manager. I'll get back to that in a sec. Just a couple more comments, Sinead, as well, before I let... I want to come back to you and finish the way you want to finish. My daughter rang Pieta repeatedly weeks ago. I'm not quite sure when the timeline's missing. There was no reply. They never called back. She presented at Casualties Suicidal, and that was a disastrous experience. We have a serious problem with mental health experts being on site at EDs as well. And unfortunately, Letterkenny University Hospital was identified as one of those. Hi, Greg. I want to commend Sinead for speaking up. Such a brave lady. Unfortunately, her story resonates with me. Our experience as a family was the exact same. Absolutely no help from Pieta. That when we were in total crisis, and since that, have never felt the need to donate to that charity because of our terrible experience. I agree it has potential, and it's such a shame it's not being run properly, in this listener's opinion. We donate to Jigsaw and Gemma's Legacy of Hope instead. Thank you, Sinead. Another, I've been to many dances with Sinead and her father performing. I never would have imagined what she was going through. For anyone going through the same, there's always someone to listen to. It's so important to reach out. Fair play to Sinead for speaking this morning. I'll do another couple, will I?
Go for it.
Well done, Sinead, for highlighting a scandal that's been going on for decades, not just in this country, but worldwide. In Ireland alone, there are at least a dozen charities where bosses receive €100,000 plus salaries, while only 5% raised goes to the charity. Those figures don't apply to Pieta, but I understand where you're coming from. I'm sorry Sinead had a bad experience with Pieta. I know people who have got much needed help. I'm sure Pieta and any other mental health charities are doing the very best they can to help as many people they can. It's terrible that we have to raise money in the first place for mental health charities to help people when our government should be putting more money into these services. Ring these services, please. The services are there. Pieta will likely answer the phone and offer you support, and I'm sure there are many, many people that have had a very successful experience. But Sinead is amongst a lot of people that I know that the phone simply wasn't answered. And I'm not going to forget or not give Sinead the platform she deserves, or I'm not going to forget the other people that have contacted us, because for the most part, the service is good, right? Because that would be leaving those people behind, Sinead, and we can't do that either. So you're saying, I'm not putting words in your mouth, the service is there, it's a good service, it's a service that could be improved, there's opportunities there. Just recap what you were saying before 11.
John Freeman, I feel like we're quite similar. If we could move mountains, we would. She just did before me. I didn't as well, but I think she's seen a gap, and I think like me today, she was like, right, okay, if the government isn't going to fund me, I listened to a podcast recently, she considered remortgaging her house just to open Pieta House. If she didn't, I'm nearly sure she might have done that. So I have no doubt that the model of Pieta House was fabulous. She has since left, and I feel the mission and the main concept of it has slightly changed. And my main point for speaking out today, that is everyone gathering and all the energy and the amazing potential that it has, is still there. I would just like it to be adjusted and shake a few feathers today to maybe see if we can get that done. I feel if I had 4 million, like 4 million, Greg, is over 67,000. I don't know, I'm not that good at math, but it's so sure a hell of a lot of counselling sessions. You know, so I'm not here to run them down. I just feel like it has got a bit stale. It has, the money isn't being invested in the way that it should be. And for our people who are out doing that for the county, it's not really good enough, but it could become better. And I hope that it does. And
That the symbolism, the amazing symbolism from the weekend, is not papering over cracks. In other words, that we ensure that the public and what they have done, that their efforts and what they perhaps believe is being done is actually being done.
Yeah.
And their efforts are being rewarded.
Yeah, and I commend the community. I'm not running them down for anyone who took part in the walk. I feel like the good, there's a great concept there. And for anyone, I'm not also saying that there is no services and you're not alone. And I want to highlight that, because so many times I felt like I really was. Like, I really felt alone. You're not alone. It's just a slightly harder path, unfortunately. And I'd urge you to, you know, keep with it as best as you can. For anyone listening who's not suffering, you know, to just be kind, like you heard that lady saying, I would have never have thought Sinead was going through that, for sure. I have no doubt that everybody listening is going through their own little thing in their own way. So this is an opportunity to remind people to be kind. And all in the meantime,
why have we lost our kindness a little bit?
Life's just got very busy.
Not as a, you know, like there's an awful lot of kindness out there. But I know there's people just couldn't wait to get the phone out and tell me and you that we're a pair of assholes.
I feel life's got very busy.
Even on an issue as sort of important as this, you know, like I've seen, you know, in terms of recent tragedies in this county, the vile language. People are entitled to their opinions on certain things, but the vile language and hate and lack of compassion. Like, we really need to, we're going to be banjaxed as a society if we don't get that back. We have it for the most part, but, you know, if we lose that, Sinead, that's, as far as I'm concerned, that's humanity.
I think we've lost a lot of human connection, you know, and I blame social media a lot for that, sadly, as much as I use it and as much as we all use it for our own lives, but we've lost a lot of human connection. And, you know, in them crucial moments, that's really all that I needed, was that human connection, to hear, for somebody to answer that phone. And to, because that's, you know, when I think back, Greg, that's what I got. I got a counsellor in Derry, and thank the Lord for him to tell me, Sinead, whatever you're going through now is thoughts and feelings. It's going to be okay. And it was okay.
Yep. So just to recap, because there's people getting hope from this as well. I think moms and dads, maybe, particularly with daughters that are
it's
in a little place.
It's very hard to be a family member, absolutely.
Yeah, that you get in touch with the right people. Firstly, you have to, you know, reach out, recognise there's an issue there, but there is a pathway back.
Yeah.
And that's the one thing about mental health that, generally speaking, is the experts there and with time that you can get your life back to where you can enjoy and be happy again. And you've done that from your lowest ebb, lying on your bedroom floor with
absolutely
the phone in your hand.
Yeah.
To,
yeah,
you know,
it took me a long time to go even.
You've launched your album and you're in here talking about it, you know?
It took me a long time to go back into Dunstores again, you know, whereas...
What were you doing in Dunstores?
Oh, shopping.
Oh, is that what
No,
you
I mean, like, I couldn't even go into my local... I couldn't even go into my local shop for a while, but,
I understand.
You know, here I am now.
This
and,
in the drapery department? No, okay.
And
yeah, that was
great.
Part of your getting back to yourself, wasn't
yeah,
it? It's funny, the wee milestones, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, it's very funny. But life is great now, and it can be for you as well. I urge someone, though, like, you know, I did have to accept help.
Yeah.
And that is a part of it. You do have to accept help. You have to look for it. And just for anyone from around someone, like, just to be a little bit kinder. And my goal is to make the path slightly easier, So we will try to move mountains to do that.
And often people make the mental physical analogy, and it's an obvious one. God forbid if I took a pain in my head right now and the left side of my face dropped, God forbid, I hate even thinking about that, right? But say it did, I would be taken down to Letterkenny University Hospital and I would go straight through the ED into potentially the stroke unit.
Yeah.
And I can get in. They give me, you know, the clot busters or whatever, and then start. So instantly in that crisis, there's a process. Unfortunately, you present suicidal, in other words, an imminent danger of taking your own life.
Yeah.
And this is not down to the staff, it's down to the structures. Those same facilities, you know, that we don't have that pathway as simply as we've just outlined.
Even GPs, Greg, and, you know, there's just a lack of education of what to do in these scenarios, and hopefully we can change that. I can actually get a nail appointment quicker than I can see somebody when I felt suicidal, yeah. And that's not okay.
No.
No.
But you're feeling better now, and...
I have to work hard on myself.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you have to do the work, but I feel great, and I'm surrounded by great people, and life is good.
Yeah, brilliant stuff. And the new album's out now.
I haven't recovered from celebrating from Donegal winning all weekend. I'm not going to lie now. So
really?
Yeah. So
it was a good weekend.
It was a great weekend. It's been a great week for me and for anyone listening. I hope that life becomes great for them shortly too.
When are you back on air?
Tonight.
At?
It's today, Tuesday, isn't it?
It is Tuesday, yeah. Yeah. You really are in recovery from
I'm not
the weekend,
joking, Greg. I'm on air tonight, but thank you very much for having
right,
me.
No problem, thank you. And just to let you know of some helplines, because it really, really is critical that you reach out and have a conversation. You wouldn't believe the amount of people I've talked to that initial contact has began a journey of recovery, and instantly in and of itself has relieved a burden, because it can be a burden when you feel so desperate. Aware is there, 1 800 80 4848. The Samaritans, 116 123. There are options for children as well. Childline, 1 800 66 66 66. Maybe you want to contact Women's Aid, 1 800 341 900. Pieta is there as well, 1-800-247-247 on their own website. They say they are there and they will answer the phones, and hopefully your experience would not be the same as Sinead's and others. We're not discouraging anyone, but Sinead is perfectly within her rights as a service user to say, look, this is life and death potentially. And if there are gaps in service, at least let us know so we can get it out there or close those gaps or find a way of making the service that safety line that you presume is there, and it has to be there just at that moment when you need it. Now, there's an interesting event coming up in the Silver Tassie Hotel on the 19th of May, 2025. It runs between 10 a.m. And 1 p.m. with the aim of empowering salon professionals, understanding domestic violence, coercive control, and addiction, and how you can help. And I'm joined in studio by a number of guests. Dr. Marie Hainsworth, always lovely to have you on the show. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Greg. Good to be here.
We are also with Inspector Siobhan Mullaghan.
Yes,
I was there. I knew it, but then I went to say it and I doubted myself. Thanks for calling up, Inspector. And Donna McGee, HSE Addiction Services Lead. Thank you so much, Donna.
No problem, Greg.
This is an interesting initiative, and I think something similar has been operating in Australia for quite some time along these lines, right? That's just me saying that, not you. But what is the purpose of this event, and I suppose who's it for?
I suppose, really, Greg, we have aimed it at salon professionals, but really it's kind of for anybody working with people. Both Marie, Siobhan and myself have done a number of initiatives together. So the HSE, the Garda Síochána and Donegal Domestic Violence Services have worked together for a long time, looking at where there's gaps and trying to see how can we respond to these. And it was something that we had been talking about, that salon professionals, a lot of the time it's like a confessional box. They know what goes on with their clients, and a lot of times they would say, you know, we really want to try and help and signpost people, but we want to make sure we're doing it it correctly and we're doing the right thing. So what we have on the 19th, we've done it on a Monday, which we know a lot of salons close on a Monday at 10 to 1, so it's within school hours, and it's open to everybody, it's free. And what we want to do is we have a wonderful lady coming to tell her story. So we have somebody with lived experience who's overcame it coming to talk about her own experience, and then we'll talk about all our supports available and how you can signpost, because I suppose it's very important for people to get the right advice. And also what we've developed is a thing like this, which has a QR code, a small one linked to all our services, that we're going to give all the salon professionals stickers for their mirrors and a resource, a booklet, so that they'll have something to take away, resources for their salon.
Yeah, because sometimes, you know, people can be so controlling that that might just be the moment someone has for themselves to reach out or inquire on something. And, you know, not everyone says everything directly either, Donna. Sometimes they're tells, you know, and I presume that will form part of the sort of the education on the 19th of May. You know, what might someone say and what's the appropriate way to react? Because sometimes it's, sometimes we don't say or do something because we don't know what the right thing to do is.
Absolutely. And you think, oh, you know, so I won't say anything, or it's not my place to give advice. So, but then I know from friends of mine who are involved in the area, and we all know people then carry that and they worry about their clients because it's a very close trust and relationship. So we want to, as part of our day, we're going to have a question and answer session that people will be able to say, if I do come across this situation, or I just get a feeling somebody's walking on eggshells, or there's something to be concerned about, how can we support? And I suppose as well from the addiction side as well, as well as offering advice on if you're working with someone who is experiencing addiction, we'll also show how to signpost if you have a family member in addiction and they're not willing to accept support, you can still get support for yourself. So,
yeah, as I mentioned, Dr. Marie Ainsworth, manager of the Donegal Domestic Violence Services, with us. You know, none of the things we talk about, Marie, and we talk on a regular basis, are the fix-all, right? But it's just another, it's another layer, isn't it? It's another step in the right direction.
It is, and I think it's part of our overall Safe to Call programme that we're trying to roll out within the community, where a lot of community projects have said, what can we do to help? You know, we don't want to be on the front line. We don't want to be listening to kind of major stories, but we do want to be able to offer support and know where to for people to go. So we've been doing work with community projects. That you mentioned the Australian model there. I think we poached this one from Northern Ireland. You know, they'd done work, the Guards and the Domestic Violence Service, certainly in Fermanagh, had done work, and we had worked then with the Fermanagh project.
Because the government has agreed to do this in 5 or 6 different places in Ireland, but it's funded and stuff, right? So I think that's where I was kind of, there's a bit of a crossover here, but it's all in the right place. Sorry, Marie.
Yeah, because I know Women's Aid have done work with salons, but again, you know, it's all right giving people a phone number, but you know yourself, there's a staff turnover, people move on. So training that's done 2 years down the line, it's out of date, or the people that had it have moved on into other places. So it kind of needs to be done on a regular basis. And I think it's about getting communication, getting conversations going in the community, people being confident, just knowing that there's a service out there. That's all we're asking, really. That's the message. Look, there are people you can talk to. Why don't you have a conversation there? And just not closing down any kind of opening where somebody might be a bit vulnerable, and not kind of just ignoring them, but just saying, look, I hear what you're saying. I don't know much about it, but look, here's a service. I know about them. Give them a ring.
It's really quite interesting, because I'm sure there are people who use that opportunity in the chair or whatever to sort of say, oh, he's such and such, or such and such is happening. And you know, In with the best will in the world, the person working with them might go, that's terrible. But there's something else they can say. Maybe that's that person sort of opening the door to, you know, will you endorse what I've just said? And maybe can you help me, you know, can you direct me somewhere that I might be able to get further help?
Yeah, particularly if the same client's coming in week after week or month after month, and it's the same kind of story, or you're hearing the same thing. It's kind of like, you know, you've said this a lot now, you know, would you like to talk to someone? What about talking to somebody else? You know, I don't know too much. I know we've had referrals directly from salons, but usually that's been a moment of crisis where a client has broken down, has been, you know, completely distraught. And, you know, we've had a service manager, you know, a salon manager phone us up and say, look, I really don't know what to do. Can somebody come out and support?
Wow.
So, but we're not actually looking at that extreme level. You know, we're trying to kind of get there a little bit beforehand. Yeah.
Siobhan, important. I mean, obviously, this is an area the An Garda Síochána are very active with, and I think particularly here in Donegal, and we've got the Go Purple Day, which is coming up as well. We heard a little earlier on about that. It's all part of the same story and the same messaging, really, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Domestic abuse, it is an organisational priority for An Garda Síochána. And this Friday, I know my colleague Niall was in with you earlier, we have Go Purple Day, and our community guards and members of DPSU, the Divisional Protective Services Unit, will be calling to the Salons and giving out information about the event on Monday, but just general information as well on supports and how to help people. I suppose from our point of view on Monday, we will be looking at telling people what is domestic abuse and what is coercive control and explaining the indicators so they know what to look out for. Domestic abuse, by its very nature, people can feel very isolated, and they're so isolated that maybe that's the only opportunity that they have to talk to somebody, or, you know, when they're in a salon, they have built up years of trust in the relationship there. It can be very hard to reach out to the guards or to even the support services, and they will maybe disclose to their salon professional, and it's just to help them to listen and to support and what they can do. And that mightn't necessarily be a direct intervention, but just to give them the advice. We'll talk about the supports on Monday and court orders and what's available, and from my point of view, indicators of high risk and indications that there is abuse going on.
Yeah, and an important part of it too is actually letting people know locally what resources are available locally. And I never really thought about that. I mean, how would you know unless maybe you've engaged with them, or you do a lot of your own research, right? But, you know, maybe not everybody who works in these areas actually knows what resources are there. So that in itself makes it a really valuable exercise, I think.
Yeah, definitely. And I suppose the QR code and the sticker for the salons would be very helpful. But even just to sit and listen to hear what is available for people, you know, the supports, but definitely in relation to courts and, you know, advice, and that if there is an emergency, to always ring 999 or 112. And if it's not an emergency situation and they have time, for victims to come to the Garda station and ask to speak in private with a Garda and explain, and we will listen. We are there to help.
Yeah, indeed. And as I said before, I think it's really important to know how to handle a situation. And with that in mind, Donna, and it's up to each business owner to make their own calls, of course. But I mean, you know, if a salon owner or a barbershop owner is listening to this, because it can be fellas as well as women, of course, right? You know, maybe they should say, I heard this on the radio, and encourage their staff to take part.
Absolutely.
Because I think it's good growth for their employees, isn't it?
We would love that. We would love if you would share it in your Facebook page and your platform, Greg, because it's open to everybody. And we want the biggest crowd we can get at it. And if we need to replicate it again, we'll do that, because we think it's such an important area. Those that work in hair salons and barbers, or even holistic therapies, they have the trust of their customers, as Marie was saying, and we know that they know them, and they see if people are a bit different to how they used to be, and they're worried about them. So it will be great. We'll be able to learn from them as well, but we'll have staff there on the day to talk to people if somebody is a bit worried about someone, that they'll be able to say, can I run something by you as well? So it's open to everybody who has an interest in coming, and we'd be delighted for the biggest crowd we can get.
Yeah, for sure. Because Marie, I'm sure too, I'm not trying to, you know, randomly pick things out, but just having this conversation, you know, you think of people maybe in the masseur industry or the hair industry, they might notice where a clump of hair is gone or where there's a bruise or stuff, you know, and it must be difficult not to know what to do in that situation. Here's an opportunity to sort of, if that does happen, and God forbid it doesn't, but unfortunately we know it does, you know how to maybe approach that.
Yeah, and the other area is not just, it's salon professionals in the broader sense, so it's nail technicians.
Yeah, anyone who has...
And oftentimes, you know, when abuse occurs, they're the kind of patterns of behaviour that people might drop off. So clients may not suddenly have been around for a while. And it's not just clients directly, but it could be mothers of clients. You know, it could be other relatives, or it could be family and friends. And they might be disclosing stuff, to, you know, just kind of running by with the salon professional. I'm really worried about my daughter or whatever. So again, it might not be the client directly, but it's the fact that the more people are able to have this conversation and the more people who are aware of the next step, if you like, hopefully we can get more people taking the first step on that journey.
And I think the more we talk about it in these platforms to trying to normalise the conversation, if that's the way to describe it, that it's not a taboo or you couldn't mention that, that's always important, I think, as well.
Yeah, and I think people get scared of conversations if they don't know what to do next.
100%.
Yeah, so it's about saying that you're not on your own here. Nobody's on their own. You're not dealing with this situation on your own. There's a whole backup of agencies and services that can
look. It's like the initiatives for how to converse with someone who may be suicidal. You know, taxi drivers are encouraged, or anyone who interacts with other people, because it is what to say. What's the right thing to say? Is it okay to say this or is it not? Right. So Donna. I don't want to be too prescriptive because, as we've all said, it's right. We're talking about hairdressers, nail salons, but there's probably 7 or 8, 9, 10 other industries this applies to. It is in the Silver Tassie Hotel on the 19th of May. A lot of the people we talk of may be off on a Monday, and we're looking for a 3-hour window here, right? So how do people enrol or get more info? Or
so it's shared on all the Facebook platforms, and there's an Eventbrite link on that as well, so people can enrol in that. Or if they can't enrol and they just want to if they find it difficult to enrol and they want to just contact us and turn up on the day, they can certainly do that as well. But just so we have an idea of numbers and we make sure we have adequate seating, it would be great if people could enrol in the Eventbrite link, which is on the guards have shared it in their Donegal Facebook page, as have Donegal Domestic Violence Service as well.
As well.
And you're going to do it as well. But the Eventbrite link is here, Greg, as well.
You're not going to read it out for us.
You're better.
Well, no, Donna, what's wrong? Why aren't you reading the Eventbrite URL out?
It's also on our webpage as well, if you go onto the main.
I just wish we could. It's not your fault. It's just these. It's like... either way, but the best thing to do is go to our socials, and it's all linked there. And it would be, I think, really encouraging to see a brilliant turnout at this.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's because people aren't willing. It's just if they've got the time and they hear about it, it would be really if the industry and, you know, who responded and wanted to do the best for their clients turned out in big numbers. Wouldn't it be fantastic?
It would be. It's on our webpage as well, which is donegaldomesticviolenceservices.ie, which might be the easiest one.
Yeah. And even if they can't come for the 3 hours, they can come for an hour. Whatever they can commit to come in is fine with us. And we'll be delighted to see everyone. And as I say, we have a lady coming to tell her story, and it was actually a salon professional she disclosed to, because in her words, it was the only person she could talk to who wasn't going to try and tell her what to do, that she felt if she disclosed her family's data, you have to go or you have to leave, whereas this was somebody that didn't know her background, and she felt that they were non-judgmental as well. So
and that was just at her part where she needed to be. That was the right person.
Exactly.
And of course we've got Gold Purple Day coming up. I mentioned this a little earlier on, Inspector. It's on Friday. There's coffee mornings and stuff, and it's an opportunity to raise awareness and start conversations and get the word out there.
Yeah, absolutely. There is a coffee morning in Donegal Town Garda Station. I know in Inishowen, the local community policing unit are going in with Lifeline to Carndonagh Community School as well.
Lifeline?
Students, yes.
Okay.
Domestic abuse.
Yeah, brilliant charity up there, yeah.
Yeah, and as I said, our own community Gardaí will be going out and about trying to raise awareness, and the DPSU's on Friday as well around. So,
And there's a lot of resources that are the guards. If people ring in an emergency, you guys know exactly what to do. You know how to deal with these cases, and there's follow-ups and all that kind of stuff. People should be encouraged by that. Very hard to get an elderly person to talk to the Gardaí. I mean, I'm not sure if we're going to get into individual situations, but that sounds to me like Marie or indeed any of you, but Marie or Siobhan, that someone is concerned for an older person that might be a subject of domestic abuse, and they're trying to get them to engage with the guards, but they're unwilling to do so. It's a tough one, isn't it?
It is, but I mean, I suppose within our service, we are an advocacy organisation, well, not officially, but yeah, we are. So part of the role would be around supporting clients and then maybe acting as that bridging link with the guards, and also encouraging that, you know, it's not about going to the Garda station all the time. We often offer our venue as places where guards can come and do interviews, but I've got many community cards will go out to the person. But oftentimes, yeah, people do want somebody with them, and that's a service that we offer.
And just in relation to it's obviously, you know, the guards can react in different ways. It's not necessarily a squad car with three uniformed officers there. You have systems in place where people can meet undercover, on the low key, if you know what I mean. There's lots of different ways that you can engage with people who are reporting these kind of instances, Siobhan.
Yeah, absolutely, Greg. So an emergency situation is emergency 999, as I said, but when there is time, and as Marie said, we work very closely with them. We have a Division of Protective Services unit who work in plainclothes, and they meet people all the time, away from Garda stations, wherever suits the person to meet. The one thing I would say about that elderly person, they mightn't recognise the abuse themselves. Mm, and that's somebody around them that is. So even if they want to talk to us in confidence, we also have the Garda confidential line, even if they're just looking for information on 1800 666 111.
Okay, anything that you want to add, any of you? That feels good.
We have some of these to give out on the day as well, Greg. Okay. So we'll be giving these resources out as well on the day. And we previously developed them.
Do you know
them.
What? Really useful to sit in where people take their tea or whatever in a salon or wherever it might be too, because you can kind of flick through. And this is, there's a lot of detail in there. Talk to us about the contents, Donna.
So basically we developed this around the time of COVID. Marie, Siobhan, myself with some other members of a working group from Donegal CIPSI, which stands for Children and Young People Services Committee, and we developed this as a resource for people living with domestic violence or coercive control, and it has all the contact details of support services. There's a digital version as well, but we have a number of copies of them will Brilliant. Be given out okay. on the day as well.
And we all recognise, though it happens to be three women that we're speaking to here, we all recognise that domestic abuse is against men and women, by the way. This is not exclusively a conversation about women being the victims of domestic abuse, and there's a lot of information in relation to recognise that men can also be the victims of domestic abuse in this resource pack that's been published.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Dr. Marie Hainsworth, thank you.
Thank you.
Great to see you. Nice to see you in studio. Siobhan, Inspector Siobhan Mulligan, good morning to you, or thank you very much.
Thank you, Greg.
And good morning to you. And Donna McGee, HSE Addiction Services Lead. Just to reiterate as well that we've talked an awful lot about domestic abuse, but I know from your perspective, this is also a space where people with addiction issues too might present, and that's going to be talked about as well.
Yeah, addiction affects so many members of a family, and it touches so many families, Greg, as well. So we will have our services there to offer supports that might be available, and also if that person maybe who's living in this situation has developed an addiction as a coping mechanism, we'll be able to offer support. Or if they're living with a family member who's not willing to accept help, we have options for them as well.
Okay, thank you so very much, all three of you. Back with more
thank
shortly
you.
Phil Boyle, whose family hails from Mallinmoor in County Donegal. Good morning, Phil.
Good morning, Greg. Good morning, Majiwa.
Thank you so much for joining us from America.
America,
Isn't
in New
it
York.
Amazing where we're at with technology now. Phil, I don't want to sound like a complete old you-know-what, but it's just astonishing that here we are in real time having a chat. And we don't have a ton of time, and your time is precious as well. So we'll get to the point. So what are you working on, Phil, and how can people help?
Sure. Thank you very much for the opportunity to be on your show. And thank you, as always, for this time. So what we've discovered is there's been honors to many of the uprising. We've just passed the uprising, 1916, 109 years ago. Yesterday, James Connolly's memorial of his passing. But what we've realized is there's no statue to Patrick Pearse, who was the person who stepped out from the GPO on that fateful day and read the proclamation, signed his own death warrant. I equate it to here I am in the States, even though, as you say, my people are from Donegal. I'm only one generation in, but we had John Hancock here in the States, and he signed the Declaration of Independence. Everyone knows that. And when he did that, he signed his own death warrant, and I equate that to Patrick Pearse stepping out from the GPO and making that fateful declaration. And it's sad, in my humble opinion, that there's no statue tribute to that to him.
And this is a national and international appeal, isn't it? Because the Patrick Pearse Commemorative Association, they're looking to fundraise to place a statue of Pearse outside the GPO, which obviously is the logical place to do it. So we need to look at this from a national, international perspective.
Absolutely. I mean, when you look at it, Pearse you know, obviously we honor all the men and women who gave Ireland its freedom, you know, and did that fate on that fateful day. But Pierce is, as they say, kind of a you know, code for the uprising. When you say Pierce's name, everybody in Australia, Canada, the United States, anywhere we are in the world, the Irish, Abu Dhabi, we know what we're talking about. We're talking about the uprising, and it's sad, in my humble opinion. You know,
so. You have your connections to Donegal. Remind us of Padraig Pierce's.
So Pierce was friends of my family, actually, and had been up to Donegal on three occasions that I'm aware of, in 1906, 1907, and 1915. He visited with my great-granduncle, actually, who is Patrick O'Byrne, the bard of Donegal, from Malinbeg, actually, and was a partner with John Ward out of Killybegs. They were very active in the Gaelic League and bringing about Irish, the Irish language. So he visited with him, and there's no surprise that then Patrick O'Byrne's nephew, my granduncle, Captain Eamon O'Boyle from Malinmore, got recruited by Pierce to come down to St. Edna's in Dublin and be part of his volunteers. But poor old Eamon, good or bad, he got sick the week of the uprising, before the uprising, and Pierce sent him on a mission to Limerick and basically saved his life. But Eamon, Captain Eamon O'Boyle, went on to do things like capture the Coast Guard station at Malinmore. And he also walked the British out of the British forces out of Donegal when he was at Finner Camp. So I have a lot of connections to Pierce and gratitude to the family. So
yeah, it seems so long away, but so recent too, when you can make those connections, isn't it crazy?
Yeah.
There's a GoFundMe page if you want to support the project to locate a statue, a commemorative statue outside the GPO. We'll link it on our Facebook. Is there is your own socials or a website available, Phil, where people can get more information?
Absolutely. There is the Patrick Pierce Association, Commemorative Association online, and there's more information. And again, Greg, thank you. Garo Mayagata, thank you so much for allowing me this opportunity to participate on your show and get the word out.
Listen, you even stuck on your Donegal jersey. How could we refuse? What time is it there, Phil?
Yeah, well, you know, with the big win this weekend, we're still celebrating even here in the States. We're very happy, and we're happy that Jimmy's winning matches again.
What time is it with you now?
It is just coming up on 7 a.m. in the morning.
Okay, I don't feel terribly guilty. Thank you so very much indeed. God bless you. Take care.
Goromayagat,
thank you. That's Phil Boyle, family from Malinmore in County Donegal, talking of that fundraiser for a statue for Padraig Pierce outside the GPO. We'll link, or you can find that information there yourself. Okay. I believe that is all we have time for. Thank you so very much to all of you who listened to the program, those of you who've watched the show, all of you who messaged and texted and commented, really appreciated it. Hopefully now you can enjoy the rest of your day. Don't forget, if you're out and about, if you're off work or what have you, take us with you. You don't want to miss out on anything, do you? All right, but we're back with you tomorrow morning from 9 a.m.